solution by looking at the variation of some variables, dynamical variables, in terms of other variables of the problem. Therefore, in what concerns quantum mechanics, the environment induced decoherence plays an important role in the solution of the measurement problem of quantum mechanics. It allows us to understand how interaction with the environment induces a local suppression of interference between a set of preferred states associated with Poincaré races. More precisely, the coherence induces a fast suppression of the interference terms of the reduced matrix describing the system coupled to the measurement device. And B, it selects a preferred set of states that are robust in spite of their interaction with the environment. These facts are a direct consequence of the standard unitary time evolution of the total system environment composition, and therefore the global phase coherence is not destroyed by simply but simply transferred from the system to the environment. We have recently noticed that quantum mechanics also leads to other kinds of laws of coherence due to the quantum effects of real clocks. As ordinarily formulated, quantum mechanics involves an idealization, that is, the use of a perfect classical clock to measure time. The equations of quantum mechanics, when cast in terms of the variable that is really measured by a clock in the laboratory, we shall see that differ from the traditional Schrödinger description and induce a loss of coherence. Contrary to what happens with the environment induced decoherence, this new type of decoherence is associated to a non-unitary evolution in the physical time. The origin of this lack of unitarity is the fact that in quantum mechanics, the determination of the state of a system is only possible by repeating an experiment. If one uses a real clock, which has thermal and quantum fluctuations, each experimental run will correspond to a different value of the evolution parameter. Due to the extreme accuracy of real clocks, can reach this effect is very small, as we shall see. The aim of this talk is to present a discussion of the interplay between these two types of decoherence and their consequences for the problem of measurement in quantum mechanics. We will also discuss the consequences of the use of real measuring rods in determination of position on relation with the same problem. Therefore, I will analyze these four points. I will start by studying the evolution equations in terms of a real clock variable. Then I will study limitations to how good a clock or a measuring rod can be. In third place, we shall see that these limitations induce a loss of unitarity and loss of entanglement. And finally, I will discuss the consequences for the problem of measurement in quantum mechanics. Therefore, the idea is to describe, I have a closed system, and I will identify some of the variables that I will use as a clock, and I will describe the evolution of the other variables of the system in terms of this clock variable. Given a physical situation of interest, described by a multidimensional phase space Q and P, we start by choosing a clock. By this, we mean a physical quantity or a set of quantities, like when one chooses a clock and a calendar to monitor periods of more than a day, that we will use to keep track of the passage of time. An example of such a variable would be the angular position of the scan of the analog world. Let us denote it by T of Q and P, we then identify some physical variables that we wish to study as a function of time. We shall call them generically O of Q and V. We then quantize the system and work in the Heisenberg picture. Notice that we are not in any way modifying quantum mechanics. We assume that the system has a Hamiltonian evolution in terms of an external parameter T, which is a classical variable. That is, I am assuming that all the beautiful properties of quantum mechanics are valid in terms of the real time and in the same, also in terms of if I use a set of variables to identify a point in space, an ideal set of variables. Then let P be a certain projector that characterizes a measurement of the time variable T in a certain neighborhood, and analogously for the observable O. And then we ask, what is the probability that the observable O take a given value in a neighborhood of O naught, given that the clock indicates a certain time T naught? This is written in an explicit way here. This is a conditional probability, and then I compute that as the simultaneous probability, and here in the denominator is the probability of measuring a certain value time. The reason for the integrals here in the ideal time t is that we do not know for what value of the external ideal time t the clock will take the value t0. Then let me suppose that the clock and the system are independent and they have an independent evolution. Up to now, we have considered the quantum state as described by a density matrix at a time t. Since the latter is an observable, we would like to shift to a description where we have density matrices as functions of the observable time big T. Recall that this is the standard form of the probability. I would like to have here a density matrix that depends on the real time and not in of the ideal time. Therefore, if I compute this conditional probability and I use that I am I have a system which is independent of the flow, and therefore the variables are in tensor product, the traces in this computation factorize, and here appear the variables associated with the system, and here the variables associated with the clock. And therefore, we may define the probability density that the resulting measurement of the clock variable takes a certain value t when the real time takes the value small t. And this probability is given here, which is the factor that appears there, and is normalized in this form. And therefore, by using the expression for the conditional probability, I may identify a density matrix which depends on the real time t, and is given by this expression. This is the probability that having measured t, this measure comes from a certain ideal time small t, and as you see, I am integrating in small t. We have therefore ended with the standard probability expression with an effective density matrix in the Schrödinger picture given by this one. Unitarity is lost since one ends up with a density matrix that is a superposition of density matrices associated with different values of t. And therefore, if the first, the original one, was a pure state, then I have a missing. Now that we have identified what will play the role of a density matrix in terms of real clock evolution, we would like to see what happens if we assume that real clock is behaving semi-classical. We do this by assuming that the form of the probability is given by a function that decays very rapidly for values of t far from the maximum of the probability distribution. I am assuming I am giving this form, this is quite independent of the form of f, but I am stressing here that the relevant information is related with the momenta of the distribution. Therefore, if I study the general expression for the density matrix in terms of the real time, and I expand up to second order in this expansion of the distribution function, I will obtain this expression, which is the standard evolution equation for the density matrix, plus an additional term. And the coefficient of this additional term is related with the derivative of the second momentum. And it will have further terms if we include further momenta. Conserved quantities are automatically preserved by the modified evolution. This is due to the fact that here, well, you have the Hamiltonian and the conserved quantities commute with the Hamiltonian. This equation was first obtained in a different context by Milburn in 1991. He was not thinking in the description in terms of real clocks, but in an universe where time was discrete. The extra term induced loss of coherence. In fact, I am going to take here simply as an example the dispersion, this coefficient as a constant. And then, if you express the density matrix in terms of the energy basis, you will have that the energy matrix at time t is equal to the standard expression multiplied by a term which, as you see, tend to eliminate the out of diagonal terms of the density matrix. We therefore see that the off-diagonal elements of the density matrix go to zero exponentially as a rate governed by sigma, that is, by how badly the clock's wave function spreads. Therefore, now the issue is, are there fundamental limitations to how good a clock or a road can be? We have established that when we study quantum mechanics with our physical clocks, unitarity is lost and pure states evolve into mixed states. The effects are more pronounced the worse the clock is. Which raises the question, is there a fundamental limitation to how good a clock can be? And the answer is contentious, because we don't have a quantum theory of gravity, and these limitations in the measurement of time and space should come from this theory. But there are several phenomenological and some not so phenomenological considerations that lead us to some conclusions. The first argument was given by Schleicher and Wigner in 1957 and Ge and Van Damme in 1995. They consider a clock consistent in two mirrors between which a light ray bounces back and forth. Every bounce is a tick of the clock, and you have here a graphical description of this system. They note that by the time the light bounces of a mirror and returns, the original mirror's wave function would have spread. The width of the spread limits the accuracy of the clock, and the width of the spread is given by this expression, and you see that the mass of the mirror appears in the denominator. So this tells us that one can build an arbitrary accurate clock just by increasing its mass. However, Ge and Van Damme pointed out that there is a limit to this. Basically, if one piles up enough mass in a concentrated region of space, one ends up with a black hole. Appears here the gravitational effects, and the combination of both effects leads to this expression where the uncertainty in the measurement of time is related with the total interval of interest and the Planck time to the power 2/3. There is also a corresponding uncertainty for the measurement of lights, which is exactly of the same type. Delta L is proportional to L to the 1/3 and times L Planck to the 2/3. In 2004, Seth Lloyd and Jack N. Propose an independent argument for deriving this limitation. They say the following: in order to map out the geometry of the space-time, they propose to fill space with clocks exchanging signals with the other clocks and measuring their time of arrival, like the GPS. We can think of this procedure as a special kind of computation. The total number of elementary measurements, events of the clocks, is bounded by the Margolis-Levitin theorem. To perform an elementary logical operation in time requires an average amount of energy, which is bounded by this expression here. Simply because you need a unitary operation, and this takes energy. And therefore, the maximum number of measurements is given by the total energy at our disposal in this sector of space-time we are exploring, divided by this energy. This energy, in fact, is the minimum energy that we may need to explore the structure of space-time, but if you try to determine a smaller distance, we will need greater values of the energy. Again, to prevent black hole formation, the total mass in this region is bounded within a volume of radius L. And therefore, from the radius, Schwarzschild radius expression, one gets that the total mass is bounded by this expression that involves the characteristic length of the region we are exploring. Thus, the total number of operations or cells of space-time is bounded by here. What I have done is simply to substitute this value of the mass there, and I get this expression. T was the maximal value of the time needed for covering the distance L with the speed of light, and therefore this expression is equal to L squared divided by L plan squared. And this is, and therefore, the number of operations that you need. If you divide the total volume of the region under consideration by the number of cells that of space, also space time that you have computed previously, you obtain the same expression. The volume of each cell will be proportional to the length of the total region you are measuring multiplied by the square of the Planck length. And therefore, the cells are separated by an average distance delta L is equal to L to the 1/3 and L Planck to the 2/3. Notice that this limitation for the measurement of length and times is also related with the holographic bound. If one assumes an entropy per cell of order one, or simply an entropy per cell which is bounded, then you obtain that the total entropy inside a certain volume will go with the area of the surface enclosing the volume if this is the uncertainty in the volumes of the cells. This limit was obtained from heuristic consideration. There is not a derivation from first principle, but there is, we have recently obtained a quite surprising result from loop quantum gravity. We have studied spherically symmetric spaces, and we have seen that for this kind of spaces, the elementary volumes have a certain value which is proportional. In the case of the spherical symmetric spaces, you are essentially looking at the Schwarzschild solution. And therefore, in this case, one obtains that the elementary volumes are proportional to the distance, to the singularity times L Planck to the square. Therefore, there are several arguments leading to the same kind of limits. If we accept that the best accuracy one can get with a clock is given by this expression, then one can compute the the coefficient of the first correction in the Schrödinger equation, and from here solve for the density matrix components in the energy basis, and we get the standard expression multiplying in this occasion by something which is proportional to the frequency, Bohr frequency squared. This is the Planck time to the 1/4 and the total the physical time to the 2/3. And therefore, one obtains a certain loss of unitarity in evolution. So we conclude that any physical system that we study in the lab will suffer loss of quantum coherence, at least at the rate given by the formula above. This is a fundamental inescapable limit. A pure state inevitably will become a mixed state due to the possibility of having a perfect classical flow in nature. The prospects for detecting the fundamental decoherence we propose are quite weak. Both Einstein condensates which can have 1 million atoms in coherent space, can have energy difference for which the fundamental decoherence electrons become of order unity only times larger than the age of the universe. However, this is a result quite surprising. LISA, the interferometer in space, would be able to detect this length uncertainty directly, not through the quantum effect. And this is interesting because possibly in some decades, we will be able to prove or disprove these estimations for uncertainty. A point that could be raised is that atomic clocks currently have an accuracy that is less than 10 orders of magnitude worse than the absolute limit we derived in the previous section. Could improvements in atomic clock technology actually get better than our supposed absolute limits? This seems unlikely. When one studies in detail the most recent proposals to improve atomic clocks, they require the use of entangled states that have to remain coherent. Our effect would actually prevent the improvement of atomic clocks beyond the absolute limit. We have computed what would be the effect in the evolution due to this loss of the unitary evolution, and it leads that atomic clocks will be favored essentially as the other model of clocks that we have considered before. Well, now I would like to discuss briefly the case of real worlds and the relation of the use of real worlds with loss of entanglement. In the case of real worlds, I need to consider field theories. In field theory, both time and spatial coordinates are ideal elements. And therefore, I am going to consider a certain model and study what happens with entanglement in this model. I am considering non-relativistic electrons, and I am thinking in the measurement of for these electrons. This operator measures the spin in the volume V1 centered at a point with fiducial coordinates x1 small x are coordinates that as small t I suppose that are not observable. And I will use quantum rods, or rods, physical rods, in order to assign positions to the detectors. And these operators, they describe these measurements of distance from certain origin. They assign Euclidean coordinates, identifying the position of the detector. We may define conditional probabilities as in the case of real clocks. For instance, I am considering here a measurement of the polarization in of a particle in a certain volume. And following the same steps that in the case of the clocks, I get an expression of this type. This is the conditional probability of having measured the position of the detector by these quantities, the probability of obtaining certain polarization. Again, one needs this probability density that gives me the probability that the measurement of given by the roots of these big X components would come from certain values of the fiducial coordinates. And again, I have the normalization condition. P, as I said, is the probability density that the measurement big X occurs at certain value of the fiducial coordinate. Due to the limitations in the measurement of length, this probability is not simply a Dirac delta. Then one may consider that P is, I don't need to assume this expression of, I have assumed here that the probability density is given by a Gaussian distribution, but the, I only need the first momenta of the distribution. I could have done the same that I did before and consider an expansion in the first momenta. This Gaussian spreads with the distance from the origin that I take for measuring the position of the detector in this form. This is a quadratic expression in the distance and is given as the Planck length to the 4/3 and the length to the 2/3 according to the estimation of the fundamental limitation that I have made before. And then what happens is the following. The conditional probabilities are not, strictly speaking, translationally valid. If I measure the distance from a certain origin, O, and I localize the detector by certain values of the coordinates, big X, and I compare that with a measurement of the distance or the position of the detector with another origin, O prime, then as the spread in the distribution grows with the distance, these two probabilities, conditional probabilities, will not be identical. Therefore, this is simply a general conclusion. I would like now to study effects on entangled systems. And to do that, I will compare Bell's inequality violations for a given position of the detectors as measured from O and O prime. Let us consider a two-particle entangled state. I consider this state. One can check that for any set of Bell operators, QR is in T such that the Bell inequality is violated. There exists a different origin at a larger distance, sufficiently far from O, such that the same quantity computed with the same entangled state will be less or equal than 2. And the condition will be fulfilled if the value of the translation A satisfies this condition. This immediately suggests that many entangled systems will present entanglement loss for any set of local observers. Up to now, we have only considered what happens with Bell inequalities. As you know, Bell inequalities are only sufficient conditions for entanglement. And in this sense, I took that only as a suggestion that this effect will appear. Then let me now consider what could be the implication for the measurement problem of quantum mechanics of this kind of effect. The measurement problem in quantum mechanics is related to the fact that in ordinary quantum mechanics, the measurement apparatus is assumed to be always in an eigenstate after a measurement has been performed. The usual explanation for this is that there exists interaction with the environment, and this selects a preferred basis. It is a particular set of quasi-classical states, often referred to as pointer states, that are robust in the sense that of retaining correlations over time in spite of their immersion in the environment. The coherence then quickly done superposition between the localized preferred states when only the system is considered. This is taken as an explanation of the appearance to a local observer of a classical world of determinate objective robust properties. The main problem with such a point of view is how is one to interpret the local suppression of interference in spite of the fact that the total state describing the system environment combination retains full coherence. One may raise the question whether retention of the full coherence would ever lead to empirical conflicts with the ascription of definite values to macroscopic systems. The usual point of view is that it would be very difficult to reconstruct the off-diagonal elements of the density matrix in practical circumstances. However, at least as a matter of principle, one could indeed reconstruct such terms. The evolution of the world system remains unitary, and the coherence of the measurement device will eventually reappear. This is what is usually known as the revival of the coherence. The fundamental decoherence induced by real clocks suppresses exponentially the off-diagonal terms. Revivals of these terms cannot occur no matter how long one waits. And I would like to show what is this effect in a model. This is the well-known model proposed by Zurek in 82. One considered a description of the system plus the measurement device simply by a two-state system, and the environment as n two-level atoms, and the total Hamiltonian is simply the interaction Hamiltonian given by certain coupling constants between the spins of the system plus the measurement device, tensor product with the spins of each of the atoms of the system. Therefore, if the initial state is in a superposition, then after a time t, simply by the unitary evolution, one gets this superposition of the states. is with amplitudes A and B for the measurement device and amplitudes that depend on the coupling constant for the environment. And then taking the trace over the environment degrees of freedom, one gets that the density matrix has an almost diagonal form. This is these are the two diagonal elements, and these of diagonal elements, which may be written as a superposition of oscillatory terms on all the coupling constants. Well, if Z vanishes, the reduced density matrix is a proper mixture in the sense that only it's a mixture of the two observed pointer states, representing several outcomes with its corresponding probability. But Z of t is a multiperiodic function that will retain the initial value for sufficiently large times. This is the Poincaré recurrence. Although this time is usually large, perhaps exceeding the age of the universe, at least in principle, it implies that the measurement process does not correspond to a change from a pure to a mixed state in a fundamental way. If one redoes the derivation using the effective equation we derived for quantum mechanics with real clocks, one gets that the off-diagonal terms are corrected by a factor which is exponential and involves the sum of the exponents for all the coupling constants of the system with each of the spins of the environment. Therefore, if one includes real clocks in quantum mechanics, revivals are avoided, and the pure states resulting from environmental coherence appear to be experimentally indistinguishable from mixed states. One can wonder if there are other kinds of correlations that allow us to distinguish between the reduced matrix and a proper mixture after the measurement. Of course, I could have considered other models for revivals, and I should consider other models for revival, but I think that the main ingredients will be there. But there are other arguments not related with revivals. For instance, Despagnac has proposed certain observers that are preserved by unitarity, by the unitary evolution, that involve the system and the environment. Such observers could change drastically in value if the reduced density matrix were to turn into a proper mixture. In the model we are considering, he proposed this quantity as a global observer that implies the measurement of the system and all the spins components of the environment. If the evolution is unitary and the initial state is psi of zero, which was the state I wrote there, then the expectation value of this observer will be given by this expression. But if the system collapses into one of the measurements, or in other words, if the state of the system is in a strict proper mixture, that is a mixture of states with a spin along the theta direction plus or minus, then the expectation value will vanish identically. This kind of signs of difference between the reduced matrix and a proper mixture are not avoided by the non-unitary evolution we have proposed, because this evolution preserves conserved quantities. And this is a conserved quantity for the total system. That is, it commutes with the interaction Hamiltonian. But if position are taken into account, in this model there is no information about positions, but you simply have a set of spins, and you have no information about the position of this set of particles. If the position is were taken into account, then it would appear the second effect, the effect related with uncertainty in positions, and simply some preliminary analysis shows that these effects could make and distinguish these two situations. Summarizing, and this is simply, one can consider that it's simply it's an hypothesis based on the small set of models that we have already studied. When real road and clocks are taken into account, the transition from the pure states resulting from the environment they create to mixed states seem to be totally unobservable, not only for all practical purposes, as is usually claimed, but because of reasons of principle related with the fundamental structure of space-time. Of course, even if the measurement device is after the measurement in a proper mixture, problems still persist with interpretation of quantum mechanics. In fact, that the reduced density matrix at the end of it is in a diagonal form is not necessarily a completely satisfactory solution to the measurement problem. This is known as the and/or problem, as Bell put it. If one were not actually on the lookout of probabilities, the obvious interpretation of even pro prime, the diagonal density matrix, would be that the system is in a state in which various states, which are the elements of each component of the density matrix, coexist. This is not at all a probability interpretation in which the different terms are seen not as coexisting, but as alternatives. It is not obvious how our contribution to the problem changes anything in the discussion at this point. Summarizing, local observers will probably see loss of unitarity and entanglement due to the use of real clocks and rods. It could be strictly impossible to distinguish between the reduced density matrix resulting from environmental coherence and proper mixtures. And this is simply an opinion, but I think that in this case, every relative state, many words, interpretation loses its compelling nature because we have not unitarity for local observers. And we need to study more relative models. Okay.
We have lots of time for questions.
In the case of environment-induced decoherence, as you mentioned, it's possible to see the coherence reappear after some time. And that's only due to the fact that the environment has a finite dimension. So if it had infinite dimension, maybe we would never see these recoherence.
Yes. Yes.
So in the case of this more fundamental decoherence, if the clock and the system are both finite dimensional, the dynamics will be periodic, and if there is some decoherence, after some time there has to be recoherence as well.
The dynamics of the whole system will be periodic, but this would be something that is not accessible for an observer that looks at the clock and compares.
Sure, that I understand, but I mean...
I don't deny the entirety of the total system. I am simply saying that...
Right, but so at the end of the day, all you're looking at is correlation between... You don't need external time, right? You just make measurements on the clock and make measurements on the system and you correlate them and you can plot C-radio oscillation and you will see them decrease, but if the dynamics is periodic, you will see the recoherence reappear. I think that
in order to see this recoherence, you need to look at the whole system as an external system from other observers. And the other observer will need a clock in order to measure the and therefore the problem will reappear at higher levels. And this is something which is related with the finitude of local observers. Yes.
The last comment you made, it seems to me there's a big difference between measuring a time and measuring a time difference. Measuring the difference between two clocks seems to me to be something for which you don't require a clock. So for instance, you know, if I have a direction in space, I need a gyroscope or a reference frame for orientation to be able to say what I mean by up along z. But if I want to measure the direction between two spins, that's an invariant quantity in the rotations. I don't need Cartesian reference frame to measure that. So I'm a bit confused as to why you say you need an external clock to measure the difference between two clocks.
To measure the difference between two clocks. No, concerning the last answer, you say. No,
right, the difference between one clock and.
I was saying that if you want to study the revival of the complete system, including the clock and the system.
I shouldn't have said measure the difference between two clocks. I should have said, I don't see why you need a clock to measure the correlation between your clock and your system. That sort of difference seems to me to be a quantity that's invariant under time translation and so doesn't require a clock to be measured. I mean, what you could argue perhaps is that it will require some sort of reference frame to be measured. So maybe the difference is measured by virtue of position observables, or maybe it's measured by virtue of angle observables, but whatever that degree of freedom is, there's some other reference frame in the background that I'll need, and that reference frame imposes some limitations. But it's a different sort of argument, and I haven't yet been convinced that it saves you from the observation of recoherence.
The way I imagine the appearance of the coherence of the total system is reproducing the analysis that I mentioned for the system with an external observer that studied how the coherence appears in the total system clock plus quantum system. And if this is the case, I have the same situation I have analyzed before.
Yeah, I disagree. In the one case, you're trying to measure an observable which is not invariant under time translation, and in the second case, when you're looking at the total system, you're trying to measure an observable that is invariant under time translation. So that seems to be a very significant difference.
Are you saying that in the second case, I will be studying a system that is invariant under time translation. Because there is an asymmetry in time, in the sense that I have an initial situation, which is simply the moment that I have prepared the system. This is a fixed instant of time. And then I measure the time interval using a clock. This time interval has some kind of uncertainties. And these uncertainties introduce the effect I was describing here. The asymmetry is given by the initial preparation, which is in the time I have done the preparation. It's, you don't need any measurement for that. If you don't have this kind of asymmetry, notice that the effect is not related with the dispersion of the clock, but is related with the spread of the dispersion of the clock. If you have a dispersion and you don't measure a certain instant, and dispersion is constant, then it would be symmetric and reversible.
So you do a calculation using standard quantum theory, which has an external time, and then you end up calculating correlations between a clock and your system variable. So everything, in a sense, is operational at the end. But this external time is not an operational concept. It's something you don't have direct access to. Would it be possible to take your approach and go maybe one step over and be able to reformulate quantum theory in a way that doesn't require even reference to the external clock?
Well, I haven't thought about that. Our point of view is that if you start from a quantum theory related with general relativity, you will have some parameterization. Let's say that you are working on the canonical approach. Then you will have some parameterization describing the foliations. I may describe the evolution in terms of this aspect parameter and consider that this evolution will be unitary. And then when I compare real clocks with the observation of the system, I will get this effect. I know that I am not answering your question.
Well, you partially answered it. You're saying that this time can be regarded really as a parameter,
right,
but not necessarily something that's real in this.
Yes.
And the effective equation which you derived for the density matter is not similar to the Lindblad equation.
Yes. This is a kind of Lindblad equation, but it's the kind of Lindblad equation that preserves conserved quantity. You may have more general in the equation.
But that equation was not fundamental. Like there was,
it's not fundamental. This is an approximation.
Because in general, it will not be local in time.
Yes.
Right? So.
This is simply an approximation.
Because then that equation cannot have recoherence, but non-local equation.
Any more questions? Let's thank the speaker again.